Don't worry.
I'm just singing the theme song, man, so that we can fade in unison.
I like to choose a different spot every time. I think when we started with the hellos, but I think it's more fun to drop in on a conversation.
I agree strongly with that.
Yeah. So you got a song out.
Oh, man, I do.
I want to talk about that first, since that was a big thing this past week.
It was a big thing for me, and you probably too, because you helped so much with it, but it's more about like...
Yeah, it's more about you.
Well, no, it's nothing to anybody else, you know? This is just so insignificant in the grand scheme of things.
I don't know, man. You got some plays.
I got some... I haven't looked at it, you know? I've checked the comments on Chorus FM, because I remember back when Absolute Punk was around and you got a post on there, you'd check the comments and people would be pretty, you know, avid about commenting on that stuff, but there's nothing except your lovely comment.
It's a little different over there now, because when it was Absolute Punk, the news posts were forum posts, but now news posts have forum posts. You know what I mean? So it's not like people who are active on the forum, if they go to the front page of the forum, they're not seeing the news posts. If they go to the front page of the blog, they'll see it. And then if they go into the news post forum, they'll see it. But it's set up a little differently than it was in Absolute Punk, for better or worse.
Ah, okay. Well, that explains the total lack of interest.
Yeah, there's not... Like, I think I comment more on the news post forums than probably most sections. But there's not like a ton of activity in there. I don't think it's a very good barometer. But your SoundCloud embed has a play count, so... I saw that there were some listens on there, which is great.
Well, I appreciate your comment and that you keep up with my stuff when I don't.
I don't have a choice.
I guess. I mean, we all have choices.
Yeah. But no, that's exciting. I'm glad you got out the single and you can start planning on putting out the full thing. Do you feel better? Yeah. Do you feel a weight is lifted?
I do. I do feel a weight is lifted, but not in a huge way. Like, for me, it's like... I don't know. It's just you build it up for so long and then it just ends up not meaning a whole lot when you put it out and you're like, okay, this is how it should be. This is how it was going to be all along, but you just were just delaying it. Like, I feel like if I had put this out, you know, 6 to 8 months ago, even a year ago when Steve had it ready, if I had just done what we did today or the other day, then it would just be so much better. You know, like, because I could have spent this year, like, you know, writing more music or something like that. It just would have been good, like, to just, I mean, I did a lot this year, but not writing music was not one of the things on my agenda.
Yeah, I can see how sort of sitting on music can put a damper on creating new music, you know, because it's like, well, this isn't really out there yet, so how can I move on and start doing something else? But at the same time, like, you've done a lot of other really cool creative things with your podcast editing and, you know, starting this show, and you've been busy. Yeah. You've been doing other stuff, so...
Oh, for sure, yeah. It hasn't... Not for lack of trying. I guess this is kind of our New Year's episode, too, so this is a good talk for New Year's and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But before, like... we haven't said, like, so... We keep mentioning the single, but it's we haven't said what it is yet.
I said Anna. Anna's out.
Oh, you did? Yeah, oh, okay. I thought it was like and, because it's I didn't pick up on it. So I imagine no one else in the world did. Old Best Friend, my band. It's not a band. It's a songwriting project. We released a single. Mm-hmm. I released a single. Jacob also released a single. But
Deanna also released a single.
Deanna also released a single. Who else wants to release the single? But it's called Anna. It's on Apple Music for streaming. Mm-hmm. It's on the Bandcamp also. It's available for pre-order, the whole album. I mean, you don't know this, but you've been listening to a stream. You've been listening to a song from the album. If you've been listening to this podcast, the intro and outro music of this podcast is a song from the new album.
And which song is that?
That one's called Wherever You Go.
That's right.
But you couldn't tell that because the words are not there, because we took the instrumental version and made it into this album and into this podcast theme.
Yeah, I think it fits great. When you said, should we use another Old Best Friend song for the show? I thought, Well, yeah, maybe, but I listened through and I couldn't find anything. But then after you brought the song up to my attention again, and I listened through and I was like, you know what, this is great. It has that kind of jaunty feel that I like.
Think it was because we both love Heavyweight, and we were like, oh, well, there has to be like there. And I was like, oh, like, what do we like about the Heavyweight theme song by the Weaker Thens? What's the name of that song again? Sun in an empty room. Yeah, Sun in an Empty Room. Great theme song. Great song in general. But what we like is, like, you know, like the snare, like the, and the kind of, I don't know, the rocky Americana kind of guitar-y thing.
Yeah, but also very light, and, you know, it lends itself to, you know, like a fun conversation.
Yeah, it's not like a, you know, intense true crime intro.
Yeah. Yeah, it works. It's good. I like using old best friend songs for podcasts. It's great.
It's way easier than having to write a whole new theme song for me or something.
And it means I don't have to like figure out how to use GarageBand loops or or something weird.
But. Yeah, yeah. I did the theme song. I think I told you this, but I would guess that my most listened to work to date is not an old best friend song, not even one of the podcasts I've edited, but the Nicole Byer theme song. So she's a podcast on HeadGum called Why Won't You Date Me. Mm-hmm. They just hit me up one day and they're like, hey, she needs a theme song, can you put anything together really quickly? And I was like, yeah, what do you guys want? And they're like, well, Nicole was in the studio and she recorded this track of her doing, like, you know, hello my baby, hello my honey. except she just changed the words to, why won't you date me, why won't you date me, why won't you date me, please. And so they're like, okay, so we found this instrumental, do you think you can mix this for us? And I was like, yeah, I guess I could mix this for you. And the instrumental was like, I went on YouTube because I thought I could find something better for an instrumental, and I just pulled the first video, and it was the instrumental that they had given to me that was like, I don't know if you could, maybe we should link to this in the show notes because of how terrible it is, but it's like an instrumental, an electric guitar instrumental of Hello My Honey or Hello My Baby.
Ragtime Girl. Like,
yeah, it's just that. And, but with an awful, like, electronically, like a terrible amp sim electric guitar of that theme song. And it's so bad. And I matched it up and I was like, guys, I can make this way better. And they're like, yeah, okay. So I pitch corrected some of Nicole's singing. Don't tell anybody. Okay. Everybody keep that between you and me. and then I kind of just did like a MIDI track for that song. And I gave them two versions of it. I gave them this weird, like, halftime kind of like Tweedledee, Tweedledum kind of like thing, and put some like crazy like reverb effect on her voice at the end of it. And they're like, this is a little weird. And I was like, okay, I get it. I did get a little weird with this one. And then I gave them like kind of like a dance groove and played that for them. And they're like, oh, Nicole loves this. We're using this as the theme song. And it's something I put together in, you know, like maybe 25 minutes, you know, nothing crazy. But it is now my most listened to piece today. It's not original. I wish I could say it was, but it's not. But it is my arrangement and my editing. So.
And don't forget, you did the theme song music for the forthcoming Layman's Hardware podcast.
Oh my God! Yes,
which I need to pay you for once I finally submit my invoice.
Wait, that's a thing, really? I get paid for that?
Yeah, I told you I'd pay for your time.
Oh my God! But yeah, well, that's great. But you know what? May wrote that though, didn't she?
She did, and I was going to bring that up too, because if she was listening to this and I didn't say that, she'd get very frustrated. Because yes,
well, May
she did.
Should,
she
May
came
should
up with
get
the idea,
co-writers.
But, yeah. I'll pay her as well.
Yeah, you should pay her most of it. I'm just the performer, so you can pay me like all great studio producers and companies. You can pay your studio musicians bare minimum, your songwriters a little bit more than bare minimum, and you guys can keep the rest.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to use that for that show as well. I'm hoping that we can get that off the ground sometime in the next week or so. But
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a new year. We skipped a week. We burnt through pretty much the rest of our backlog of episodes. We're actually current right now. We've got an episode coming
pretty
out
much,
in the morning,
yeah.
But we're current now. And
did you feel like as we were starting to eat away at the back episodes that we had kind of stocked up, and did you kind of feel good though?
Yeah. No, I feel better about it because I mean it feels safer in a way to have like the backlog just in case something comes up, because I think we had to burn through one or two of them just because of schedules, not necessarily holidays.
It was Thanksgiving, and then we had 2 weeks essentially of Christmas and New Year's that we kind of didn't do because I was in Florida for a little bit.
Right.
And then we must have burned through one more at some point, but
it feels, I like having the episodes out a little bit quicker. I think it's more timely. It makes more sense. It's going to be more stressful when school kicks back in, I think, because I'm going to have less time for editing. So I like to edit them in batches when possible. That way I can just schedule them and have them ready, and I don't have to worry about it for at least another week or two. So it's fine. If we have time, we can try to maybe get like another extra one in the can over the course of a week or something, just so we have like that extra buffer. Luckily, we don't really have any holidays coming up.
Yeah,
really,
yeah. We're kind of in the clear.
I don't think we need to skip for Easter.
When does President's Day happen?
I think it's in February. Actually, we may need to. We may have to get one ready because I have a work retreat in an undisclosed location sometime in late February. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
Is that for Breaker?
It is. I'm kind of concerned about it. They set the dates, like they sent a doodle around last week to see what weeks everybody would be free. And I had kind of two tentative weeks, and I think they picked one of those. And they're tentative because I don't know for sure because classes haven't started and I don't have my syllabi. But I'm pretty sure exams are going to be sometime within a 3 week range in February. And it's very possible that there are going to be exams the week of the retreat, which will be unfortunate one way or the other. It means I'm either not going to be able to go to the retreat or I'm going to have to sweet talk some professors into letting me take exams early, which is also not fun. So it's a little stressful, but I'm looking forward to it. If I'm able to go, it seems like it'd be really cool because, I don't know. It's fun to travel and also to see everybody that I work with in person since I have a remote job. I get to see everybody on Google Hangouts once a week, sometimes two, but it's nothing like being able to hang out in person and whatnot. So,
where is Breaker based?
Breaker is based in San Francisco. There are currently three employees there, the two founders and then our designer lives there. I keep forgetting that we just added like two new members to the team, but they haven't been in on a lot of meetings since they were hired right before the holidays. So there are four of us that work remotely now. There are two programmers, one for the web and one for our Android app, which is coming soon. And then there's Steve, who is like our server backend engineer. He lives in somewhere on the East Coast in a much warmer climate than I, and then I'm here in Ohio. So most of us are remote, which will make it interesting. I'm not entirely sure all who's going to the retreat. I think it's probably all of us but the two newer guys. And I don't know where the retreat is, but I'm going to assume that me and Steve have to travel the furthest. So we'll see.
Yeah,
that's okay.
That just makes me realize how not in HeadGum I am.
Yeah, man, I was thinking about today. I actually went to the HeadGum website this morning for reasons I cannot even recall, probably something for Breaker, and I was like, why isn't Mike on here? Like, he does a lot of editing work for them. Put him on the website.
But you know what? I don't know if I do a lot of editing work in as a whole. Like, I do one of their podcasts, which is one of their bigger ones, I would think, but they have so many shows that I do that I'm not, like, I'm not really involved in a lot of their shows anymore. Like, the New York studio is not, it really exists anymore. Every podcaster is now kind of on their own here. And so I Good One is like a big part of my time. Mm-hmm. And then like they call me in on a few other things whenever they need something in New York.
Well,
but
I think they should
have
all of you editors on the thing. It's I mean, take you guys away and what do they have? They've got some really bad Skype recordings.
Yeah, well, I think most of the podcasters are self-sufficient at this point.
Yeah, that's sad.
It's sad. It's sad, but it's also kind of good.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, I mean, New Year's goals, what do you have going for you?
Oh, man. Well, as I do every year, I wrote sort of like a end-of-the-year review, just kind of forcing myself to take a look back at all the things that I have and have not done in comparison to the year before. And this year, like this past year, I guess my main goal was to simplify, just to make things a little easier for myself. you know, I don't have like as much stress through work life, but that's increased in other areas such as school. So simplifying a little bit was the goal there. And I want to continue to do that in 2019, but I also want to try to, you know, enjoy myself a little more. Like I get so stressed out and caught up in the stuff that I'm working on, that I just kind of like, I forget to do things that are just relaxing and fun. And we've talked about on the show before how I want to read more and I want to write more and like make things and play video games, and all that stuff is kind of like tied up into that. I just want to try to like make time to do that a little more often. Just chill.
Just chill.
Just chill.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What about you?
Get a new job is probably my biggest goal, but I feel like that's my goal every year.
Well,
I don't know.
It's not so much about what your goal is, but like what steps you're going to take to make that goal happen. So
yeah.
Do you feel like you're in a place where you can like start, you know, taking more steps towards finding a new job?
Well, it's about taking a risk. Like, yeah. I mean, I can give you an example. Like we talked about it briefly yesterday, I think, by a text about those Gimlet openings that happen. Mm-hmm. And obviously openings are never a guarantee. You still have to compete to achieve like, or to get an interview and get the job. So yeah. I'm going to talk about this as if I were to get the job, but obviously, you know, it's a long shot by any means. So like the jobs that are open on Gimlet.com right now are, this is one part-time producer job, I guess, editor, engineer. I think they're calling it a part-time engineer job. It's like a contract role, 3 months. And so we talk about what would I have to do to get ready for that? And I mean, aside from the skills thing, we talked about Pro Tools, you know, I'm a mm-hmm. Logic guy, but Pro Tools, I have some familiarity with it, but I'm probably not as fast on it. That's obviously a setback. But then we talk about, you know, what do you have to get ready, like personally and lifestyle wise. So, you know, going into a part-time contract role with them, I mean, like, what do you, it's a podcast, you know, so like, but it's a bigger podcast, and you kind of got to figure out like, what is it going to demand from you, mm-hmm. In terms of time, and could I continue working my day job while taking on a part-time contract role? And the answer that comes to mind first is no, I could not. And that's for a lot of different reasons, but mostly it's just like, you know, you never know what's going to happen, and kind of being scared to take that leap of faith and saying like, okay, I'm going to go freelance. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah. That is scary. I'm especially into freelance. Like that's zero net, you know, like there's nothing there for you, but, I don't know. It is scary, but I think you're in a better position now because you have the experience and you have the skills to make it. It's not so much of a risk, you know, by way of like your ability to do the job. Because if you were to land a position, you know, you're going to do great at it, and that's only going to give you more opportunities. So like, I think every year that you continue to do these smaller podcasting projects, and I say small, but like, come on, Good One's a pretty big show. Like the more of these projects you do, the more work you're going to get as a result of that, just from who you're meeting and the bylines that you have. Like it'll just snowball from this point on. So I think you're in a much better spot this year than you were last year before you started doing Good One.
Yeah, I mean, it's all cumulative, I think. I mean, in May, it'll be 3 full years with HeadGum. Mm-hmm. I won't have to fudge it anymore in a resume, you know, like, and you know, say I've been doing it for like almost 3 years, or like, you know, just about 3 years.
You can start fudging and say 4.
Well, I mean, most things that I've been seeing in the podcast world, because podcast isn't like a new medium, but it's only been around for, you know, about 10 years or so, right? You know, so...
Yeah.
It's not like you can't ask for like someone like a veteran in podcasting anymore. It's not very common. Yeah. So most of the requirements I'm seeing are like 3 to 5 years of experience of whatever. So I'm in at the bottom tier. I hit the bare minimum, you know, like, so 3 years ago, you and I decided 3 years ago, pretty much 3 years ago, right? We started in the new year of, it was like February of 2015 that we started.
First
doing
episode
Bantha
went
Fodder,
out
right?
January, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Which is wild.
Cause it was right after Force Awakens came out. We were talking about our shared love for that, but like, so, yeah, essentially coming this month, 3 years of dedicated podcasting. You know, you and I have been dealing with audio stuff for a long time, I feel like, in terms of like music or whatever. But now it's actually, you know, podcast time that we've dedicated to, which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely another talking point in the resume. The other thing is the show that's on Gimlet right now that has that contract position open is one I've already recorded for, which is really funny to me. It's,
you've got to put that cut in your head, in your, like, your, that, well, your letter.
I think it really, like, right now I have, like, it's not real, but I have, like, this, like, pseudo rapport going on with Gimlet now because I've applied for probably, like, 3 or 4 positions there, uh-huh. which is not, like, I mean, for the amount of positions they put up, it's not like I'm trying not to sound like the desperate like fanboy who's trying to get his way, like the roadie who's trying to be in the band or whatever.
Sure.
Like, that's what I feel like. But it's not that desperate and that pathetic. It's close, but it's not that pathetic. And so like it allows me to write a better cover letter every time I apply to them. Mm-hmm. And usually it'll be like 6 months in between applications. And in those time, like I had the food podcast I did, which was a narrative, not a narrative, but like a This American Life of Food or whatever, you know, type thing, which I didn't have the first time I applied to them. Then the third time I applied to them, I had Good One on the roster, and which was like crazy turnaround and intense interviews with high profile comedians. So like every time I talk to them, there's something new. And this time around, I'll have to be like, oh, actually, you know, your first episode of your podcast, I engineered a small segment of that. And so like, you know how meticulous I am with this stuff.
Yeah.
Although it's, I don't think from, you know,
that's
going to
mean very little to them, but it might be like funny and interesting enough to get you the interview.
Right. It's also like, because they didn't credit me on that episode either.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you might not know this because they didn't say my name in the end of the episode. But
yeah, but I set up the microphones and hit the record button on there. But I also, you know, like I exported the files, you know, very quickly and efficiently and got them to your reporter. So how about a hire? Thanks so much.
I think you're edging closer.
Maybe one more year. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
They have a position at Wall Street Journal open now, and then the question becomes like, okay, that's a full time position. Mm-hmm. It's like a studio coordinator essentially. Wall Street Journal is going to be doing a daily podcast now.
Yep.
Which is like New York Times does the daily, and Wall Street Journal is probably coming out with something equivalent to that. And so, like that, I can only imagine the nightmare that would come with that job. You know, like. The deadlines and the amount of people you're coordinating with and the planning ahead that you're going to have to do. It's just one of those, like, it's a big job.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I should get my feet wet in terms of like production first, in terms of like a faster paced production environment rather than jumping. Again, I'm speaking of all these things as if I would actually get the job, but mm-hmm. it's just more about thinking ahead.
Right. No, and that's good. That's good. You're going to get something very soon. I can feel it in my bones.
Jake's pulling the strings behind the scenes.
No, I wish. It's just so weird because it's like we're edging closer to this what I feel are like similar areas but from very different spectrums. Like when you texted me, was it yesterday or this morning, when you were talking about the Gimlet job, and I was like, I had just hit send on an email to their marketing guy. Like I we're both like in contact with them in very different ways, but I'm not trying to get a job with them right now. It would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, those are good resolutions. I think those are both actionable on your half and on mine. So
I had a personal resolution too. Like there's obviously career based ones, but personal ones like to try and improve, mm-hmm. Was because I've talked about this on the show before, but I live with Erin, my girlfriend Erin, and her small dog Olivia. We live in a one bedroom apartment with, you know, we have a living room too, but our desk and computers are in the bedroom. And so if I'm doing something like this, like I have to keep her awake or something in the night or something like that. Or like if I am just like shitting around on the couch on my phone, you know, she like has to go to bed early. It's kind of just like a, you know, like I would keep her awake if I get into bed like 2 hours later than her, just cause I'm just dicking around on the internet or something like that or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so my resolution was to go to bed at the same time as her this year.
Oh man, that's a great resolution. I so wish I could do that too. I just like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's a degree that sometimes it's not feasible.
Yeah. Which is I feel like all the time it's not feasible, or it should be, but like I get all my best work done in the evening, like when it's dark and like nothing else is happening. There's nothing going on in the day to distract me. Like, President Trump is asleep. Smart News stops sending me notifications. Like, everybody except my friends on the West Coast are in bed. Like, I get so much work done during those hours, but I do feel bad because there are occasions when I'll go to bed, and I go to bed anywhere between like midnight and 3 a.m. some mornings, and that's not great for May, who is, you know, fast asleep. And if I don't wake her up completely, at the very least, you know, I'm like interrupting her REM cycle when I'm trying to get the dog out of my spot. So that's a good
oh, that's
goal.
Right. You let the dog in the bed. That's,
yeah,
that's a big one.
Yeah. You know what? I want to adopt that one too. I'm going to try to do that one more. Maybe not every night, but I'm going to try to do it. I'm going to try to go to bed more. I think that could actually be conducive for my other goal as well. I could probably read books and stuff in bed, because for Christmas I got May a sleeping mask, so I can leave my little light on and I can read a book and she's not going to know the difference.
I don't think Erin could use one of those.
No?
I think it would be impossible for her. I think she'd be too scared of just like waking up blind or something like that.
I think you get used to it. May seems to really like it. She had to adjust the headband a little bit so it didn't cut off so much circulation.
I'm so sensitive to like the way, like physical touch while I'm sleeping, that like if I had something around my head, it would just be like...
I tried it on. It's like, I don't know. I don't think it's that noticeable. The one that I got her, and I did look to the wire cutter for their review of the best one. The one that I got her actually has like, it looks like a brassiere, because the eye cups are actually like concave, so that your...
Oh, I see.
So your eyelashes can like, you know, blink when you're
flutter.
In REM. Yeah. So it doesn't disturb those. It's not going to like tickle you. It's not going to like interrupt your sleep at all. It's kind of cool.
That's like very... It's not dystopian. What's the word for it? It's very surreal to like wake up and look over at your girlfriend and suddenly she's like wearing these like...
It's kind of scary.
She's wearing like these weird like bulbous sleep mask on her face.
She looks like a very drowsy superhero of sorts.
What color is it? Because you could draw like eyeballs. You could put like fake pupils on it.
Oh my God, Mike, that's
tape
such a
googly
good
eyes.
Idea.
Tape... Oh, you... Okay, May, don't listen. May, turn off the podcast if you're listening right now. But what you should do is you should... put googly eyes on the pod, on the sleep mask.
That's so funny, because
for April Fools,
like just before Christmas, we had like a friend Christmas, and we just made handmade gifts, and I had no idea what to make my buddy Jared. Like, I was gonna just like buy him some like beef sticks and maybe like a block of cheese or something, and May's like, no, you have to make it yourself. I'm like, well, I can cut it up for him. But
that's
apparently
like
that wasn't gonna fly. So we're in Target, I'm walking around, and we walk past like the ladies section, you know, with the underoos and whatnot, and I saw leggings, and I'm like, huh, and it just like snapped in my brain. I decided that I was gonna make him a doll. I was gonna like stuff a pair of women's leggings and just like, you know, wrap it around and then make it a doll somehow. And so I did it, and when I ended I ended up using like a old Under Armour t-shirt that I had bought but never worn and was never going to wear because it's a hideous color, and I just stuffed it in there and I twisted it off at the end and then pulled it back around and then twisted it off and pulled it back around and then tied it off, and in the end it looked like a piece of shit. Like it looked like a log of feces. So I didn't know what to do. Like, I'm like, I don't know what else to do to this to make it a doll. I don't really have like any more supplies. So May grabbed some Google AIs from work and I just put those on. And so now it's just a log of shit with Google AIs, and I gave it to him and he loves it and he called it Corn Chunks. And now I'm wishing that I would have asked for a couple of extra pairs of Google AIs, because that would have been really funny the next week for her Christmas present. That would have been so good. Oh, well. Next
God.
Year.
What did you get May for Christmas?
Well, apart from that, I got her... May walks to work. So in the morning when she makes her coffee, she puts it in her coffee cup and she walks to work. But during the cold months, it does not stay cold all the way to work because they're not very good mugs. So
right.
I got her a big, big handled thermos.
Like the ones we were talking about?
Yeah, like that. And then I also got her like a big insulated thermos mug. So she's got both.
Yes.
She has some that she can drink while she's on her way, and she can put up to 6 cups in the thermos to take to work.
That rules. That's a great gift. And that's super handy.
Yeah. She also got Polaroid film because we went to a and this is funny. We went to a estate sale in a town not too far away, and this house was awesome. It was so cool. So much neat stuff. And we went on the last day. I was amazed at some of the stuff that was left over. But May got an old Polaroid camera. One does color and can do black and white. And she got it and didn't have any film, so I got her some film for Christmas. But at the same estate sale, she bought me, and then wrapped it up for me later for Christmas, a tri-corner cap, like a Revolutionary War cap.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't think it's that old, but it's made to look that way, and it's currently sitting on my Stormtrooper helmet.
That's cool. It's sick. You put on Chewbacca.
Chewbacca is in his case because I don't want anything getting in his hair. He's in a glass box.
Right, right. But the hat would look cool.
It would look really
cool. Display case lighting on Chewbacca.
I could build a bigger case for him and I could put it on, because that actually, it would look a lot cooler on him.
It'd be so weird.
So yeah, what'd you get Erin?
I got her, we frequent this jewelry shop in New York City. They're pretty much national at this point. I think Banana Republic carries them, but they're made in New York, and they have their display room and workshop in New York. So I got her a bracelet that she not she didn't tell me she wanted it, but her old one wore out, and I know she liked the hook kind of design with it, and I also had it engraved, and I had to think, because like the engraving was free, and I was like, I wonder what I should put there. Should I like write like I love you or something like sappy like that? Should I like put her initials, which is EMO, which is really funny because emo,
right?
Should I do you know, like write just something like some inside joke? And in the end, I was just like, I'm just going to write hi. And so I did it. And then the person, the shop owner, you know, reached out, and they're like, okay, we did it. Do you want to come pick it up? Do you want us to mail it to you? Like, what do you want to do for shipping? And I was like, oh, I work, you know, really close in Manhattan to your shop. So I'm just going to drop by, your shop, if that's okay. They're like, okay, these are the hours, you can come by. And I show up, and the nice, owner, she lets me in, and she shows me, she goes, so the engraving that you want us to do, we did that. Now, is this for a girl? And like, I don't know if she was, I don't know why she asked that, but I was like, yes. And she's like, okay. And is HI her initials? And I was like, no. And I was like, she goes, oh, okay. I see. So it's just like, hi, you're like saying hello. And I'm like, yes. And she's like, because the guy who was engraving it, he thought it was like hi, it was HI, like somebody's initials.
Right.
So
he did it all
he
caps.
Kind of like, yeah, so he did it in all caps, which is what I think the only option is all caps.
Okay.
So it's that's not the issue. But it was the spacing. It was like H and then a space I, and they were like kind of like off center and goofy. Because it's just like what do you call it? Like an embosser, like it's a stamp, like a metal stamp, like where he hammers in the letter into this metal. That's what it was. It's not like he's actually engraving with like an iron or something. He's like hammering a letter into it. And so I look at it, and it's kind of goofy. And like, if you go to Erin's Instagram, I think it's there. And and I look at it for a while. She's like, if you don't like it, if it's not like something that works for her, then like you can definitely just call us up and we'll redo it for you. He's like, we just interpreted it differently, but it's not your fault. And I was like, you know, it's got character, you know, I said that to her face. I was like, it's really got character, and I think I'm going to try it out. And I gave it to Erin, and it's so goofy. And she looked at it, and it took her a second. She's like, oh, huh. And now it's just, cause it's just like, you know, like I'll be sitting in the kitchen, she'll be on the couch, and I'll just like, kind of like poke my head out of the kitchen and be like, hey, Erin. And she'll be like, what? I'm like, hi. And I thought that would just be good to have in her wrist of like, just typing at work or something like that. She just looks down at her wrist and she's like,
Hi.
Just me saying hi in the middle of her work day.
That's funny.
So that was that. And I got her, they also do like a nice little stirrup ring, that I think was kind of cool looking. She didn't ask for that. And definitely doesn't need another ring from me, but yeah, I just got her that too, because it looked nice.
Cool. That's great.
And that was it, I think. Yeah.
Did you get anything cool?
I got an Aeron chair. Erin.
What is that?
You know what an Aeron chair is. It's like the nicest desk chair that every like schmancy office has. It's like this just very like posture improving and comfortable, ergonomically sound chair.
Oh yeah, these are comfy as heck.
Yeah, they're really expensive, but I think Aaron got it from like a going out of business sale at like some office had some stuff that was getting rid of or something like that. That's like the best way to get these chairs is to like hit up old businesses. I think because Ben from Venetia Fair / Score where he is now, he when he was working in Syracuse, him and Steve both had tandem Aeron chairs in the studio that they were working out of, and Ben didn't have one for a while, but like for his Christmas present, I think he got an Aeron chair, and he's like, oh dude, yeah, we got hooked up, we hit this like used dealer or whatever, and
that's great.
He got like the what's it called, the the thing in the back, what's your lumbar support thing. Aaron got me like the posture support thing, so it's this little tension rod that goes like right at the base of your spine and kind of just like you can adjust it to like push the bottom of your spine to keep it from sagging down at the bottom.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a dream come true. It's very adjustable. It's a little low for this desk, but that's okay. We figured out how to make it work with the arms being the highest as possible. So it's ultimately great. And it's nice. The old chair, if I send you a picture of this, you'd be like, is this some kind of torture device? Let me see if I can send you a picture of this now, because it's just essentially all it is it's a chair, but it's like, imagine the outline of a chair, like the frame of a chair, but it is just rubber bands just going up horizontally across the whole thing. It looks, and if you sit in it for too long, essentially, if like you're shirtless in it sitting, as we are wont to do before we go to bed or whatever, it'll just like imprint lines in your shirt. It's like the funniest thing.
Like a beach chair?
No, well, sort of, but imagine like rubber bands, like bungee cords. I just sent it to you. It's ridiculous looking. I've been using that for like years, like the year that I've been living here, you know, with Aaron, using that. Yeah, like that's what we were using, and like it's a cool looking chair, and it's not uncomfortable, but like it was too low and didn't have adjustable arms, and so I had to use this. Here, I'm sending you a second picture right now as we record this. It's you're gonna love this too. It's a butt chair. It's a butt cushion. So it was to give me lift so I could have better posture, and like my arms wouldn't get sore. Like my shoulder was getting super sore when my arms were too low, and so. I was using this like seat pad. I think who was the person that used that? It was like Martin Shkreli or something like that used a little butt cushion at his trial or something like that. Who was it?
I don't know, but I can see it.
It was somebody getting skewered. It wasn't Shkreli. It was not Mueller. It was.
Oh man, Mike, this looks like the kind of donut that you give to an old person so they can sit down easier.
Yes, and it was very comfortable in my ass. But that's what I had to use in this. Now I don't have to anymore. Something I thought I had to use, I don't got to use it no more. Like it's just a little butt cushion. It's great.
That's awesome.
But no longer. And now we just have these two chairs here, and we're going to have to sacrifice this one to the lobby of our building and just see if anybody wants it.
I'm sure someone will take it.
Yeah.
Are you going to leave the cushion with it?
I don't know. That's a nice cushion. You know, you might need that someday. Yeah. I could use that, you know, and who knows? I might have like an elderly person that wants to come sit down on that.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a nice cushion.
That's a good gift.
So yeah, that was my holiday, and yeah, it was good.
You spent most of it in Florida, is that right?
Yeah, I flew down on when was it? The 23rd after work, and then I spent the 23rd to the 28th down there. And let me tell you, I don't know if you've ever spent winter holiday in, I don't know if is Florida considered tropical, probably not. It's but yeah, in a warmer climate. Yeah, by our standards, yeah. So like if you spend a holiday in a kind of inverse region, because I imagine people in Australia, if they come and have a cold, like Thanksgiving or Christmas, then they're like, well, that's weird. So yeah, it's weird. Being down there, it's like 70, 80 degrees, and you're just kind of chilling, and you're like, oh, well, it's like I'm used to feeling cold at this time of year, and with these like the sensory feelings you're having, or like the memories you're having, and the cognitive memories, like processing that you're doing, is like, oh, it's Christmas time, you know, like Christmas commercials on TV. You're like, oh, I should be cold right now when I walk outside, but instead I'm running in like shorts and a t-shirt in the woods, and like, you know, going swimming in a pool. And it's like, it's very strange.
Yeah.
And I don't like the house across from my dad's had Christmas lights up, mm-hmm. which was interesting because there's no snow or anything. there's no trees either. It's not like a tree area. There's like the trees don't really lose their leaves. And most of it's palm trees. So it's like, there's no scenery to go with the Christmas lights. It's very, I guess it's what LA must be like in Christmas time, but I don't know what that is.
Yeah. I can't say I've ever spent Christmas. I don't think I've ever spent Christmas away from home. At least not that I can recall.
When home is like one area for a long time, like my home has changed dramatically in the last 5 years, like between my mom moving south and then my dad moving south and me being in New York. And it's just, yeah, it's not like a, it's a very, home is a very weird concept at this point in my life.
Yeah, that's, that always comes out the hardest during the holidays. Like when my folks split up, I was like, okay, this is going to be weird, but now like the situations are getting even more like separated and scheduling is a lot harder because it's not just me anymore. You know, it's like me and May and we have her folks to visit and they live in a different part of the state. So it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of schedules and trying not to leave anybody's feelings hurt at the end of the holiday.
Do you have to, split the day between a family or do you like a Christmas the day after kind of thing with each?
This year worked out pretty well. We spent like Christmas with friends, on the Saturday before, I think we had to wait for some friends to come into town. We were able to do an afternoon thing with them. We left there and went straight to dinner with my mom. And then I think we had like a day off and then it was Christmas Eve, which we spent with my dad and my grandparents. And then Christmas Day, we had to travel for May's parents. So it worked out this year. Like we've been able to, since we're like I'm the only kid in the area. Like since Sarah lives in New York, and I don't know if she came back for Christmas last year. I'm not sure if she did, but she wasn't able to make it home this year because she came up shortly after Thanksgiving. It kind of just leaves me to. I'm kind of like the one that everybody needs to see, I guess, for the holidays, which makes me sound more special than I feel because, you know, it's still like it's hard. You got to figure out like, okay, who's going where? Even if we are able to see both my parents, we kind of have to like make the choice. Are we going to see May's side of the family? Or are we going to see my mom's side of the family? Who's there? You know, they're the ones that usually host like the Christmas Day thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's like a weird thing and it's stressful. And this year we tried to make it like as unstressful as possible, but even still, like we ended up cooking a lot and, the travel and having to, here's the really weird thing. Okay. So if we have to go somewhere, generally we have to leave the dog with somebody. And the only two people that babysit or dog sit are my parents, my mom sometimes, and sometimes my dad. And this year it was like, I don't know. Like we both felt like really awkward asking them because we weren't spending the day with either of them. And so we ended up kind of using the dog as an excuse to not have to be away from home for too long on Christmas, which was, you know, kind of nice, but not great for the dog. So
yeah, dog does become a big change in your life. Not as bad as children, I imagine.
Well, children you can take with you and are acceptable to bring into other people's homes. Dogs are not.
Right. And children can't be, I would use the inverse, children can't be left alone.
Yeah.
Like children are annoying to bring with you for sure. Like they're probably, I would argue that people would rather have Olivia at a party or like a get together than a screaming baby that just shits all over itself or whatever.
Yeah.
That's my opinion of babies anyway. yeah, Olivia's way cuter and at least poops outside most of the time. It's just like a, yeah. But yeah, the babies can't be left alone. Even though Olivia has the mentality of a toddler, she can probably not get into anything too crazy while we're away.
Yeah. What's the longest you generally will leave her by herself?
Oh man, it's like now the longest, because Erin's been so great about coming home. Because Erin works closer to us, not by much, but like, you know, she only takes her 15 to 20 minutes to get home, depending if she catches the train at the right time. So she can come home on her lunch break to walk the dog. And she's been doing that, gets her out of the office, gets her moving, gets her walking, and then gets the dog walking. So that like if Erin gets into work at like, you know, 8:30, 9:00, she'll be back by like 11:30, 12:00 to walk the dog. Before that though, it was terrible. Like we would leave her for so long, you know, and Erin is not really into the idea of a dog walker, because it's a stranger in your house. You know, it's New York City, and when you're hiring a dog walker, you're typically using like WAG or one of the other, you know, I forget what some of the other fur walker things are, like what do you call them, you know, like dog walking services, but they WAG, there's your free ad for this episode, you can hit us back at a later time, but yeah, it's just, you know, and you're hiring a stranger essentially, and you can make deals with, like, you can hire a walker and schedule time with a specific walker if you find someone you like, but for the most part you're just getting matched up with a stranger if you're trying to do this last second. And I tried it a couple times when Erin had to go away for work or something like that, and I couldn't get home to walk the dog. I'd, you know, call a walker over, but it was just too weird, for Erin, and ultimately weird for me, because, like, you never know. And Olivia's like a very, what do you call it? Not temperamental, because she's like pretty docile, but like she's very
particular.
Like she's, she takes a second to warm up to you. Mm-hmm. Like she's the sweetest dog in the world once you spent more than 15 seconds with her, and like obviously a stranger, she's very protective of her house, you know, she's not gonna like freak out anybody who comes in, but like she'll bark at them and like kind of be resistant to having a leash put on by a stranger, which is, you know, hard to explain to a walker in a text message every single time you do it. So that's just to say that dog walking services, unless it's a regular dog walker, are not that great. And I don't think Erin or I really want to grant a stranger, a relative stranger, even somebody that you're hiring, regular access to our apartment.
Yeah, man, we don't trust anybody. Like I think maybe once or twice we've had to be like far enough away from home that we felt that the dog needed to go outside, but not far enough away that we needed to like take her somewhere, that we've had some friends come over and let her out. But even then, like, I'm so nervous. Like, when I leave the house, most times, I'll end up running back up the stairs to, like, double and triple check that I locked the door, like, closed and locked the door. So,
right.
Having somebody else, even if, like, they're the most trustworthy people in the world, like, we all make mistakes. We've all left the door unlocked. Like, we've all almost closed the door, thought that we closed it, but didn't quite let it click. Like, that makes me more nervous than anything else. So, whenever we have to have somebody do that, I'm just like, please have them triple check the door. Like, I'm just so anxious about it. I don't trust anybody with my dog because I don't know.
Yeah, that's you. And Jazz is not, she's not a small dog, but she's not a huge dog.
Yeah,
like she's
a medium sized dog.
Like that's the kind of dog that like I would be nervous, like, because like Jazz potentially, like, you know your dog's temperament more than I do, yeah, obviously, but like Jazz could like break a window if she hurled herself, right?
Yeah, I don't think she would even think to try it.
Right. I mean, but that's the thing, though. I've just read, like, nightmare stories about, like, a dog, like, a super separation anxiety, you know, like of just, like, a dog throwing itself through a window or something like that, or, like really damaging its pen or room that
she's done that.
In or whatever.
You were there around the time when we got Jazz, like...
Well, she was an escape artist, right? She would, like, chew through her gates or, like...
Well, when we got the dog, you know, it was just me and my dad at the house, and he was totally fine with it, but he wasn't comfortable with, like, letting her out when we weren't home, because we had, like, another dog, and it was a smaller dog, and, like, you know, we didn't know the dog yet, and the dog didn't really know us yet, so he wanted to play it, you know, safe and cautious, so we just put her in, like, the laundry room and closed the door. Then she destroyed the floor and the door, just scratching and gnawing away at it, trying to get out while we were away. She like destroyed it. It's still all messed up. We've never had it fixed. So then I went out and I bought her I don't like cages. I'm not a fan, but I felt that it was necessary in this case. So I went out and I bought her the biggest, bougiest cage that you can get for a dog, like massive kennel. It's made for like Mastiffs. It's huge. There's plenty of space. And I filled it with all of her favorite blankets and cushions, like totally comfy. But she hated it. She didn't like being closed in like that. She didn't like being away from people. So she would just go at the door and she would squeeze her nose through. You know, it's like, it's the kind of thing where you have the slide over pin that, you know, that keeps it locked. And she would squeeze her nose up through the corner where the door of the cage would bend away, and she'd cut her nose all up. And eventually she'd get free. Like, once you jiggle the thing around enough, it'll pop open and she'd get out. And it wasn't, then she'd just keep clawing at the door.
Let it go.
So that cage has sat there pretty much completely unused. I think once or twice we brought in a stray while we were trying to find his parents, and we put it in there overnight. But she hated it. And the trick, like the thing that we never thought to try, was just let her have the house. Because we did, and she was totally fine. She can't be away from people. So she just wanted to be near us. Or if we weren't home, just like know that she wasn't trapped. So once we did that, she was totally fine.
That's the real trick, man, is just like finding the level of trust that you can give with their dogs. Yeah. And there are people that can't trust their dogs, that their dogs will just destroy everything if you give them free rein. But like the history of Olivia is like, you know, for the first few, I think the first year of her life, Erin wasn't working. She was on disability or something like that. So she was home with Olivia pretty much all the time. So they had this like time to bond, time to walk every day and just kind of be together all the time. And then Erin had to go back to work. And so she went back to work and essentially like didn't really trust Olivia so much. And you know, just, it's part fear, like human fear that something bad is going to happen. But also, you know, like if Olivia was a puppy and she'd like go to the bathroom on the couch or something like that, it ruins the couch. And, or like if she would go somewhere else and so Erin kind of devised like in many houses, like there's a lot of little alcoves and like little hallways. And so in that apartment, there was a hallway that was big enough, like probably, I couldn't say what the size was. It was probably like four feet wide by, you know, it's a square. Yeah. Like a 4 foot square, essentially, 16 square feet, if you will. And Olivia is like a 12-pound mini dachshund for anybody who hasn't caught up on this yet. So that's more than enough space for something like her. And she would be kept there for a while. And we tried the kennel approach too, but she would just hate being confined that way. Mm-hmm. And she would bark and bark and bark. And eventually, you know, she would settle down, but like the slightest noise would cause her to start barking again. Mm-hmm. If like somebody's outside the door in the next apartment over. And that went on for a really long time. And we moved into, well, Erin moved into this new apartment. This is before I moved in here. We moved Erin into here and we had the kitchen, and the kitchen was kind of our next spot. Like it was like, okay, it's a little more space for Olivia to be in. So we would like kind of kennel her in the kitchen with like a gate, a baby gate or something like that. And that we left for a little, like probably a little over a year, maybe. Mm-hmm. And you know, she would still do the barking thing if we left for a long period of time. If Erin had to go to work or if we left out for the night, she would just start barking and eventually settle down. And finally, like when Erin went to London for work or something like that. And I, you know, I was at work and we were watching her, and, we saw that Olivia, like Erin came home at one point to let Olivia, like when she finally came home, I was still at work, and she sees that Olivia's mouth, and Olivia had broken off part of her tooth, like one of her lower teeth, not like down to the root, but like at the very top of it. So now she has kind of like a sawed off tooth in the top. And she had done it by chewing on the gate for such a long amount of time. And it's like, it's a metal gate, so it doesn't give or anything like that. And it's just ruining her teeth. And if you look at her little, like, I don't know what you call them, her incisors or something like that, like her front teeth, those are all like worn down too. They're not like, you know, brittle and falling off, but they're definitely, you know, chipped and everything from chewing on the gate. Aww. And like, that was finally like the last straw for us to be like, oh no, like we have to, like we can't, Olivia can't do this anymore. Like she, there's gotta be a better way. And so you start to evaluate your reasons for having a dog in a secluded place the first time. And you're like, okay, well, we don't want her jumping on the couch because we don't want her jumping on things because she's a mini dachshund, and like one in four mini dachshunds will slip a disc from like doing jumping, sometimes for no reason at all, but usually in the first few years of their life they will slip a disc, and that's like a very expensive surgery. It can be like $2,000, it could be $10,000, who knows. Sometimes they'll never walk again after that, so we're like, it's not worth the risk. That's what Aaron decided from, like, you know, from getting Olivia. Is like, it's not worth the risk of letting this dog jump around and hurt itself and ruin its own life and our life because of that financially. So you start to evaluate, like, okay, what is the dog going to jump on? The dog is going to jump on the couch. It's, you know, like 2 feet off the ground, and it's a long jump for a mini dachshund that's, you know, 6 inches tall or whatever. And, so we're like, okay, what can you do? So we thought about different options. We got this space blanket. Aaron got this space blanket. It's essentially just like a giant tinfoil piece.
Yeah.
With like, it's tinfoil sewed into a blanket essentially that you put over, you drape over something, and it's so unpleasant to hear and sit down on and like move around on, that like it's supposed to deter the dog. And I don't think we even used it once. Aaron took it out of the box and she touched it, and I was like, no, we're not using this, because every time we have to put this thing away, it's going to be the most annoying loud sound in the world, and it's just, there's a better way than using this stupid blanket. And we returned that very quickly, and we just built a fort on the couch. That's all we did. I could probably send you a screen grab from one of our security
camera footage. You stack up the pillows?
Yeah, well, yeah. We because we did that at first. We would stack the pillows up on the couch, but then Olivia would find a way to jump on the couch. And she's just a dog, and like dogs just want to see everything in the room, especially when you're low to the ground. You want to see the world. Like, you ever heard stories about like dogs jumping on top of like cows' backs on farms or whatever?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a thing, and they just do that because they want to be up high. And Olivia would do that, and so when we stacked the cushion, she would find a way to jump from like one thing to the other, into the thing, to onto the top of the things. So what we ended up doing was we built like a pyramid on top of the couch, and we took like the cushions that you sit on the bottom of the couch. We just kind of angled them at like a probably like 70 degree angle. And so it's kind of like, it's impossible for her to jump on the couch now, because she'd just like roll right off of it for no reason. And so that has been working for the longest time. And we gave Olivia free rein. She no longer barks when we leave the apartment. She just sits on her bed and chills. And whether that's the result of like, you know, her getting older, she's six now, you know, Aaron got her when she was 6 months. So, but she would still be barking, I think, if we were still kenneling her when we left. But she doesn't bark anymore. She might bark, I think, if like there's a loud noise outside the apartment door, which she's right next to now because she has rein. She's blocked off from the bathroom so she can't drown in the toilet. She's blocked off from the bedroom so she can't jump on the bed and like tear the sheets off the bed, because she will definitely do that if she's bored. But yeah, she's not destructive. We hid all our food on high shelves so she can't get to them. I just feel like I've been going on for like 20 minutes about this now, but like it's just,
well, it's a big part of your life. Like it's something you have to think about all the time. You know, you got to make sure like the gate's up. And
it was a very big trial and error. Yeah. Like I'm more just trying to discuss it for anybody who might be hearing this, who's like trying to figure out a better solution, or who maybe somebody who can just be like, yeah, that happened to me too. Like, just because there are ways, like you just have to figure out how well to trust your dog. And like, sometimes you got to give it an inch, before it can like, you know, really, you got to just like try to like take every precaution necessary. But like,
yeah,
Olivia may have been, you know, bark free if we just kind of puppy proofed the apartment beforehand. Like we definitely had like mess up before that. That like Aaron used to have a really high kitchen counter, and Olivia would just do like this weird, like essentially Aaron built her stairs by accident by having like a small stool and a medium stool and then the high counter right next to it. So Olivia would like go one stool, she'd go to the next one up. Like each one is like, you know, 12 inch jump, you know, up in the air. Mm-hmm. And finally she'd end up on top of the kitchen counter. And Aaron would be looking on her little security camera and be like, what the hell are you doing? And like yelling at Olivia, like, get down, Olivia, get down. And Olivia would find her way down eventually, because like she got up. But like, it's just like the most dangerous thing in the world for a mini dachshund to be up on a pedestal, like, you know, 4 feet off the ground.
She's like a cat.
She is. She's so annoying.
Oh man.
But like, I mean, like for the damage that a large dog can do and like the size, like Olivia makes up for it and like just the weird cat like abilities.
Yeah, Snickers had a lot of those tendencies too. She liked to get up on the couch and not just sit on the couch. Like when she was younger, she would get on the arm of the couch or sit on like the back of the couch, you know, like a cat would, just as up as high as the little shih tzu could get. And when we'd ride in the car, you know, I had like a I had a little sedan. It's like a Ford Taurus, basically. And when Snickers would ride in the car, she would jump up on that little, you know, sill that sits by the back window, like behind the seat, but up on top of the trunk. She loves sitting there.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah.
Like you stop?
Yeah. If we stop, she's just going to go
flying. She's a projectile.
Yeah. There's nothing stopping her. I mean, there's nothing stopping her if she's just sitting on the seat either. That was my rationale. I'm like, well, like, I'm just going to have to drive carefully. But, you know, in either case, she was not buckled down in any sort of fashion. But yeah, you know, little dogs, they like that. They like to be up and about. But we got really lucky with Jazz because, you know, once we started trusting her more in the house, everything was fine. And I don't know why. I think my dad was pretty hesitant, and it makes sense. It's his house. But like when we first got Jazz, we didn't have to put her on a leash to send her outside. Like from the time we got Snickers until the day, you know, that she was put down, when she went outside, she was on a leash, and she, it was like a long enough lead that she could go out, you know, in the yard and do whatever she needed to do, but it was attached to the porch, and there was no way that she was leaving a 30-foot radius of the porch. But Jazz never needed it. Like the day that she came to our house, she was, you know, really excited, and especially when she was younger, she was a very submissive peer, so if she got too excited, she would just pee. So we had to let her out all the time, and I would just open up the door, she'd run outside, she'd go to the bathroom, but because she hates to be away from us for so long, she would just run right back. I've never had to worry about it. Like, we don't...
Oh, what a great dog.
Yeah. She doesn't even wear a collar most of the time because, you know, I'm like, I wouldn't want to wear it. So I take it off when she's at home. She's a lot more comfortable that way. And we let her out the back door, and she runs down the stairs into the backyard, does her business, sniffs around for a couple minutes, and runs right back up. I mean, we watch her the best that we can, but there has never been a need to, because she'll always just come back whenever she's ready.
Truly blessed. You are truly blessed by your...
We certainly are. Yeah. Oh, dude. So, okay. At my dad's for Christmas, my grandparents were there, and my grandmother was flying out the next morning. So we spent Christmas Eve at my dad's. We were actually there pretty late that night for how early she had to fly out. But she flew out at like 5 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day, which is, it just sounds insane to me. Like I wouldn't want to travel on Christmas Day, but from what I hear, it's actually not a terrible day to travel because most everybody's where they're supposed to be on Christmas. But anyway, she went to Arkansas to be with my aunt, her daughter, for her 50th birthday. She spent her the 50th birthday of all of her children with her kids in whatever state they're in. So my dad in Ohio, and I have an uncle who lives in Washington State, and then my aunt lives in Arkansas. So she flew out to spend the birthday with her, and my uncle, as sort of a surprise, he likes to make videos. Like kind of, you know, like movie maker slideshow videos with music and little video clips and lots of embarrassing photos. He gets a real kick out of this.
Of the family, like a family oriented kind of thing. Or is it like just like Boomer on Facebook, or like Boomer chain email of just random images from like the 1940s?
No. They're like family pictures and stuff, like pictures that he'll take. And he always takes like goofy photos and stuff like that. So when we all meet up for vacation during the summer, we bring like a projector and a big sheet so that we can like watch a movie outdoors one night or something. Lately he's been taking to making these videos. So he was going to make one for my aunt's birthday, and he asked everybody to record short little clips, you know, just looking at the camera and saying, "Happy birthday, Jody." And he's just going to get it from everybody who they haven't seen in a while or lives really far away. And, you know, just a nice little thing. So while all of us were together, May and I, my grandparents and my dad, we were all together at my dad's house. We all put on the Christmas sweaters that my dad got us for Christmas. And then, you know, these are like, they're ugly Christmas sweaters. They're pretty great. Actually, mine has little, Tyrannosaurus Rex that has a scarf on it. May's actually has little feet. It's really funny. But we all put those on, and we all like, you know, waved and said, "Happy birthday, Jody." And I sent it off. So this started like a 3-day chain of nightmares with codecs, just like video codec incompatibility issues.
Oh no.
And I felt terrible because like everybody else who sent one was probably on an iPhone, and they set it and it worked just fine and there were no problems. I sent mine and he could hear it, but he couldn't see it. And I'm like, oh, it's that new Apple high efficiency video codec that they're using.
Oh, HEIC. Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Sorry about that. Let me just, you know, I'll convert it and I'll send it to you. So I converted it to an MP4, which I would think would work because it's been a very standard format for a very long time. So I formatted it correctly. I sent it off. It didn't work. And this whole time, like, he's trying to make this video in secret and he has his mother-in-law there. So like, he's entertaining, he's playing host. Like, there's probably very little time that he can like get away and make excuses because he's probably not working that much during the holidays. So he's trying to do this in secret and he's not able to do it. And then he got sick. So he's like, he's feeling terrible and he's still trying to get this to work. And I'm trying to like get him something that will import into his ancient copy of Windows Movie Maker. Cause I don't know what version of Windows he's using, but I'm assuming it's Vista. And I think, you know, he's probably never updated the drivers. Nothing has been updated on that machine forever. And so I'm trying to find documentation on like what it should accept. And I'm looking around and everything says that it should accept like MOV, 3GP, MP4, like all of these formats that you would think it would take. It's just not taking. And finally, I figured it out. It had to be a very specific audio codec and video codec in a very specific container format. Like I think I ended up sending him like a MGP. Is that right? Like an original MPEG or MPG? Yeah.
It's MPG, like, yeah.
Yeah, which I haven't used in like a decade.
No, I don't think anybody.
I finally got him the right file, but I was just like, I was just like blown away at the complexity because there's no, like, I imagine that this happens to older folks using this program all the time. And he would have never been able to figure out how to convert that to the right thing. He's lucky that I know what I'm doing, because if that would have happened with any of the other people that he got a video from, there's no way that they'd be able to fix it.
Yeah.
I mean, his suggestion when the first video didn't work was, could you try recording it off of your computer screen onto your phone and then sending it again?
Oh, no.
I'm like, well, here's the problem. My phone is recording in a codec that your computer has no idea about, and that's why you can hear it, but you can't see it. Now, if I were to do what you suggest, it would be the same exact situation, except that the copy of that video would actually look terrible. So it wasn't like a huge deal, but it got me thinking about how complex things have gotten when they're supposed to be getting simpler, because not everybody is updating. And I forget that because I live in a world of the the latest software and the latest codecs, the latest drivers. Like, anything I pull onto my computer will work. And if it doesn't, I have a computer that will convert it in 2 minutes and then it will work. But for everybody else in the world, like, I completely forget that they exist and that they also occasionally have to deal with audio and video and sound. And it's wild.
It makes me think of the USB-C thing too, and how much that's going to screw everybody up.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't.
It will until it doesn't, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can't think of, I mean, we've been on USB 3 and 3.1, like that USB-A we've been using for who knows how long, you know, like 20 years mm-hmm. now at this point, like really, like it's been a long time. And to get everybody over, we've used Lightning for what, 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just like today I thought about getting, I was thinking about getting a new iPad Pro, one of the new ones, and thinking about like, oh damn, that sucks though, because like if I'm at work, it's going to be hard for me to charge my iPad Pro if I need to. Like, I can't just pop it on the dock with all the other Lightning things here. I'd have to figure out something else. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, I can't like bring one charger on a trip anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it's like, it's better for me to keep my old iPad Pro because it has the same charger, yeah. You know?
I mean, that's the problem now, but those of us in the know, like we can see the future. We can see that there is, right, a one-cord, like you said, future.
it's like a problem until it isn't,
right?
You know, and like maybe the next phone, iPhone, will have USB-C on it. I'm really hoping it does, and then I can just finally just give myself to USB-C. Mm-hmm. You know, just take me USB-C. It's all I want. But until then, you know, it's going to be.
You just need to have 2 to 3 devices that require it, and then order a nice pack of USB-C cables from Amazon or Apple, wherever mm-hmm. you like to get them, and put them all over your house. Put a couple in your bag, like. Then you're done. You don't really have to think about it anymore. And that is what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to being able to like charge my Switch and my phone and my computer and, you know, all the different things that I have like all with one cord. And that's really, really exciting, but it's going to suck in the meantime. And you know, my grandparents are thinking about buying a new computer.
Oh, yikes.
And it's, so it's like, it's tricky because they have an old PC. I think it's running. It's probably running Windows 7. It's pretty old. And so right now they're, you know, my grandpa's like, look, if I have to throw a lot of money at this problem, that's fine. I just want something that's going to work. I want something that is, you know, it's going to be my last computer. And I don't like, I know, I don't like when he says that, but I know what he means. Like he's gone through, he's done pretty well with his PCs. Like these are very run of the mill. They're not super great personal computers. They're all like Dells, you know, pretty standard builds, nothing super fancy, no antivirus. Like the fact that they've gone on as long as they have is amazing, but they want something that's going to last. I'm like, okay, look, cause he's like, well, you know, would it be good to have somebody build me a custom computer? I'm like, you have no need for that. He's like, well, why not?
I mean, it's saving some money probably.
No, is it? Because what do they need? Like they need to check their email. They need to occasionally word process, and they need to be able to print. They don't need a custom build for that. Like they can save a ton of money on the man hours and like the parts labor by just buying a stock build. They could buy the cheapest computer there is and just make sure that it has tons of storage. Like storage is going to be the first thing to run into.
Well, paying someone to build it is one thing, you know, like,
yeah,
my friends all build their own computers. So like I thought like maybe they'd have you build it or something like that.
Yeah, but there's no need. They need a stock computer that has good antivirus software. I'm like, look, save your money on the hardware and just buy really good antivirus software. So you don't have to worry about it. Or I'm off next week. Grandma's gone next week. Why don't you and I go down to the Apple store and just see how you feel? I told him, I'm like, look, it's.
I wouldn't even go to the Apple store. I would go look for one of the old Mac Minis, like the 2014 Mac Minis that hadn't been updated until this year. Like those things are probably selling for like $500 now.
Well, that's what I told him, but he lives.
They can use their old screen, like because you can't get those at the Apple store anymore. They pulled them, I think.
Well, at the very least, like I just want him to see the interface because he was asking me about it. He's like, what do you use? And I'm like, well, I have a really expensive Mac computer, and he's like, well, how is that different? Can we get one of those? I'm like, well, okay, you could, but there's
it's
a learning
such
curve.
A high cost of entry.
Yeah,
it's a learning curve, and I'm sure there'd be some frustration with the iCloud stuff, which makes me think he should probably just opt out of iCloud if he did that.
Yeah,
but like,
well, at the very least, like May made a good point. She had not used Mac prior to getting a Mac at work, but you can get a Mac to emulate a PC fairly well. As long as you have the documents that they're used to seeing on their desktop, on their Mac, it's pretty much the same thing. The biggest difference is where like the minimize button is. It's on the opposite side of the screen. But I told him, like, it does cost a lot more, but what you're getting is you're generally getting more reliability. And we don't need to get into all that because I'm sure anybody listening to this probably understands the difference. But it's sort of scary because he's, you know, he's going to be buying this thing, and presumably they're going to be upgrading their phones at some point, and those are going to have different chargers, and computers are going to have different chargers, and it's just like, it's so much complexity for somebody that doesn't expect that kind of thing to change, because as long as they've had computers at their house and like things that need to be charged, it's used some sort of USB-A cord. You know, it has like maybe the it's a mini or it's a micro, and the end might differ, but the charging end goes into the computer and it goes into a little block that they can plug into an outlet.
Oh, wow. So, dude, I'm looking at the refurbished Mac Minis now on Apple's website.
Yeah.
Like they have some for like $420.
Yeah. I mean, they...
For like a Mac Mini. If they have a monitor already, man,
they do
and
already
a keyboard,
have a monitor.
Then that's all they need just to get into that. I mean, granted, they're probably... What's this base Mac Mini is probably like what does it have in it? A whopping 4 gigabytes of memory, 500 gigabyte regular hard drive, just a hard drive, not even SSD. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I want to take him to see it first because I have a feeling that he's interested in it. He's curious about it. Like, I think he aspirationally wants one, like most people do. But I have a feeling that allowing him to poke around on one of the display models will scare him off. It'll just be too different.
I
would love if he used Mac because it would be a lot easier for me to fix his problems. Because I'm the person that he calls to fix his stuff, and I can try, but I'm so out of the PC world now that it's very difficult for me to do
same.
It. Because Windows has changed so much since XP.
Can you remember your first Mac experience? That was probably like school or something like that, but like your first personal Mac experience. Like my first Mac experience, like owning a Mac computer personally, was 2005 with a PowerBook G4, and I was coming off of like a Dell Inspiron, whatever was out then.
Yeah,
and that was like, I remember like the biggest thing for me was the file bar kind of just always being present up at the top. That was so like that if you're like looking for curveballs that are going to be thrown his way, like the file bar is going to be one of them.
Yeah.
And like the idea of the dock, because it was like not having that start menu at the beginning was like, that was weird for me to not have a start menu.
I was able to get by that because I thought that the launch pad was really cool, but
it is,
I think the thing that threw me the most was programs not closing when I hit the X.
Yes, that is so disorienting.
It's so disorienting because you can't, like, wait a minute, is it closed? Like, is it still using power? I see, because this, you know, there used to be like a little light in the I guess there's still a little dot. There's still a dot, but it used to be that kind of like fake texture that made it look like a glass that had a little LED below it or something, you know? Because I started in 2011, a lot later than you did, but that threw me off. But the rest of it was so exciting because I was so familiar with PCs. Like, I could customize any portion of a Windows XP operating system. I changed, you know, I was very into like changing the login sounds and the colors and like anything that I could customize and make my own, I did. I would tear apart the computer and toss in like extra hard drives as slaves so that we'd have extra storage. Like, I was already customizing the family Dell. But when I got the Mac, I was like, man, I don't know shit about this. And that was so exciting. It was so fun.
That's fun. Oh, good. I mean, like, most adults are terrified of that.
No, I mean, heck, the computer came with like photo booth. That's super. That's just like fun. I opened up the computer for the first time, and I'm like, man, there's stock stuff in here that's actually like entertaining. In the way that when you got Windows XP, you had, or I was it Vista? I think XP or Vista that came with a 3D pinball game for PC. I was like, oh man, actually a good game that I can like play. And the Mac had chess, and you know, I guess that's not like the most fun, but it was like 3D chess, and it looked amazing. And the screen was like unlike anything I had ever had at school or at the house or anything. So it was really exciting. It was less disorienting for me because I was intuitive enough to like figure it out, but it wasn't scary. Like, I think it is for people that are very, very used to Windows and have never even thought about trying anything different or even knowing that other options that were out there would be different. Like, I had already been messing around with Linux on my family's computers. Like, I was installing partitions with Linux, filling up my family's computer with really, really bad distributions of audiovisual Linux. But yeah, I don't know. It would be a big change, but it's something that I've been thinking about at least showing him just to see how he feels about it.
Yeah. It's always interesting seeing those reactions.
He likes to walk around in there, and he likes like going there for his phone service. He says they're all very knowledgeable and helpful.
It's the only store that like I feel like people will just go to check out. Like, I don't know, like when you go to a mall, like pretty much it's just like, oh, let's just go to the Apple store. Yeah, let's go see it. Yeah. I mean, back when I was younger, in like my teens, it was like, oh, let's go look at the new iPods or whatever. See what else they got there now. I want to go touch this thing. It was never about the Macs. Never about the Macs until I was way older. But like, yeah, I just remember like the video iPods. That's what I was really into.
I wish I would have bought one, man. I regret it every day. I just removed
the video iPods.
Well, like the iPod Classic, you know, like the big one that had the video screen and everything. Yeah, I just last week removed it from my Amazon wish list because the prices are so ridiculously high.
Dude, I would have sent you my video. I recycled mine last year, I think.
Are you kidding?
Before I moved. Yeah, I mean, the screen was starting, the LCD was starting to go, but yeah, no, I totally e-cycled
that. What was the storage on that bad boy?
It was way too high for me. I think it was
256.
No,
because that's what I wanted. Like even when they retired the thing, I have a buddy Brandon who still uses one, and his went bad right before they canceled him, and he picked up another one, and I think he's very glad he does because it's the perfect thing for the car. I mean, it's better now that we have like streaming services. You can get wherever you want, and our data plans are a lot bigger. But he's able to fit almost his entire music library on that thing and just leave it in the car. And it was just like, it was just the car player. It was just the radio already had everything that he would ever want installed. And I really liked that. But I guess it's not so important now, I suppose.
It's so weird how iPod gets relegated to like, it's not even on the banner anymore on Apple.com.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. It's just like, it's iPod Touch is the only thing they have right now. And what's the highest capacity you can get now with an iPod Touch?
It's probably like 32.
128.
60. Oh, really?
128. Yeah. 32 or 128 are the two options. And it comes in, you know, a bunch of different colors. And like, the reason I would not want an iPod Classic is I would never want to have a portable music device again that relies on a spinning hard drive. It just wasn't.
Yeah, but could you imagine like, all that device on an SSD?
That thing? I mean, like the form factor would be incredible. Like if they brought, like there could be an, oh man,
an anniversary.
Here's a great idea for Apple. An anniversary edition. I don't know which anniversary of the iPod is coming up, but like if they made an ultra thin, it would get broken really quickly. But like if they made an iPod Classic, the thinness of the new iPod Touches that are out now with maybe a built-in camera and like the video screen that was on the last video, but with the scroll wheel and the click wheel, people would buy that. People would flip out about that.
I would buy it, but I would prefer that it's the same thickness. Lighter if possible, but the same thickness. Oh. I love that chunky little brick. It felt so good in the hand.
That'd just be so much empty space in there, though. If you're not building a chassis around a blocky hard drive, then you're just going to have empty space. Or it's going to be like
Like I don't. If it has to be the same weight, that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I loved the weight of that thing. It felt so substantial, and it felt like, I have all my music in my hand. Like, it just felt great.
I just can't believe the head scratching I used to do when that thing would die. Like, I would be like, I got the sad face, the Mac sad face on the thing. And I'd be like, I had to send it in for warranty service like 3 or 4 times. I'm like, huh, why is this happening? And it's like, oh, it's because you're outside snow shoveling in like 10 degree weather with your headphones on and your iPod falls out of your pocket into the snow. Like, that's why. Or like you're going for a run with your spinning hard drive. Like, what are you thinking, man? Like that was me, you know, in my teens, you know, just treating this like I just can't. It was just the weirdest thing.
Yeah. I loved my MP3 player. I miss that. Like it's great that I have everything on my phone. I have all my podcasts. I have multiple podcast apps. I have multiple ways to play music from the cloud on my phone. Like it's an amazing thing, but it was great in school, especially before I had a phone, to just have my MP3 player with me wherever I went. And I had so many awesome little MP3 players, and I'm still nostalgic for it because it was just like, the controls were specific for playing music. The screen and the interface, everything was about organization and finding music properly. Like Apple Music is so convoluted now. It's so crazy. And yet it is preferable. But it would be nicer to have like a better interface, which is why I like having my Plex library available to me on my phone, which is kind of nice because their interface is a little more intuitive and more drill down, which is kind of how I preferred to navigate my music library. But yeah, I mean, I used to know exactly how long to hold on a scroll wheel to get to the band that I wanted in the list, you know?
Yeah. Oh man. Like an iPod Classic with Siri support though.
Yeah.
That would be cool if I could just hold the center button just like I would on an iPhone. And basically I'm slowly converting this iPod this anniversary iPod Classic into an iPhone. Like it's just the stupidest device ever.
But you can stop at certain points. Like, okay, when you had to fill up your iPod, you had to bring out the cord, you had to plug it in your computer, you had to put stuff over. Imagine not needing to do that and just being able to check mark the stuff that you want sent over, and it does it over Wi-Fi. Like, take all the great parts of the cloud and wireless and all the technology that we have now, but add it to that great form factor. Ugh.
What do you think about, like, a piece of home hardware, like that sent, like essentially like the HomePod, you know, like that type of thing, or like a Sonos, essentially like a home media console dedicated to music. I wish that was cool still. Like, I wish it wasn't like an audiophile thing where you had to get like a great tube driven stereo or something like that. Like, I wish like a jukebox, you know, I wish we had the equivalent of a jukebox now. Like, that gave purpose to album art again. So, like,
yeah,
like gave a place for liner notes.
I mean,
I guess it's just a computer.
It's kind
you
of
know?
A, yeah, it is. And there have been hobbyist projects kind of like that. Like, you know, Marco had a thing where, you know, he basically put albums on like SD cards. He just filled up a bunch of cheap SD cards with individual albums, and he made like a little thing with a Raspberry Pi that accepts it and automatically starts playing it, has playback controls, and it's just something that, you know, plugs into the stereo. So rather than playing it off your phone, I guess it's sort of like a cool semi-analog. It's a retro digital throwback in the way that like cassettes or vinyl are for those that prefer analog. But it's basically like adult hit clips.
those didn't even play the full song. Those played like a minute of the song, which is insane.
Yeah, there was a second round of hit clips. They were called something different, and they sold them at Walmart. I remember like a Nickelback album came out on it for a minute, but it didn't take off.
An entire Nickelback album.
Yeah, it was Dark Horse. It wasn't even that long ago.
Like Nickelback and the executives, I was like, all right, listen, we have like 100,000 order for CDs this week. We have like a small order for cassettes. You know, the vinyl's going to be limited edition. We might run that for Silver.
And Walmart's doing hit clips.
And we also have a batch of hit clips. And Chad, what's his name? Chad Kroger.
Yeah,
just leaning in, be like, hit what? Like, and then the executive having to explain to Nickelback what a hit clip is. Or like them having boxes. Imagine like the independent artists are like, hit clips are coming, man. We got to make a hit clip. I'm going to be the first one to make an MP3. Like the White Stripes did that. Do you remember? Like they would put their CDs on these little like custom USB hubs. Like that. I just remember seeing that in Rolling Stone. I'm sure there was bands way before them doing it, but like in the early days of the White Stripes, they were doing that. Like just
there was a
stashing their album on those hubs.
I think the Flaming Lips, they did like gigantic gummy bears, and inside the gummy bear was a USB key that had the album on it. There's like a bunch of cool projects like that that just it was just like a different way to distribute digital copy of the album. But yeah, I don't know. I'm nostalgic for those things, but I know it's totally unnecessary. I would hate to carry it. Like, as much as I like to hold it, it'd be the kind of thing where I would want to just leave it in my bag. Like, I wouldn't want to put it in my pocket like I used to for my MP3 player.
Right.
But.
Oh, man.
Hey, so we did a Twitch stream.
Oh, yeah, we did. It should be a good spot to plug that.
Yeah, so on my Twitch channel, which is twitch.whatever/curbsideaudio, last week we did a little Twitch stream for about an hour or so. I think like the first hour and 45 minutes was spent trying to get through some technical difficulties.
Yeah, once we figured that out, and man, what did we say what game we're playing?
We're playing The Dig, which is a 1995 LucasArts adventure.
Think like Escape from Monkey Island, right?
Yep, it was built on the exact same software. In fact, I'm really excited for the next time that we do it, because here in my handy dandy notebook, I have a half page of bullet points here with a title that reads The Dig Facts. That's a working title. There's probably a better pun in there, like dig this or, you know, something like that. But
I like dig this better.
Yeah. Or you'll dig this. The game was published in 1995 on the Scum engine. That's SCUMM. That's it stands for something something Mystery Mansion or Maniac Mansion, and that's like the engine that they built the game on. And Curse of Monkey Island was built on the same engine.
That's funny. I think once like we got the mechanics down, because I guess nobody's ever going to be able to see us again. We didn't record it or anything for posterity, right?
No, it's available to stream on the channel.
Oh, Jesus, that's terrible. I never want anyone to see that again.
No, it's good.
It's going to get better. It's like this podcast. It's going to, as we hit our stride, it's going to be way better. But like for this, like it was just a shitting around in this game, probably for an hour of it was just like clicking on things and hearing the same conversation trees over and over again, not really knowing. They don't give you the mechanics in this game.
They don't, there's no instructions. There's no hand holding.
And it's not even like a tutorial, and like this game is not going to get more difficult. It's not like the bosses are going to get harder. Like
it does get harder
in terms of like puzzles. Yeah, like, there's no reaction commands.
No, there's a couple of puzzles that are like,
the puzzles are fine. Puzzles are I can deal with that.
There's a couple that are notoriously like nonsensical. Like they're
bad. It's not like a final world in like Mario Brothers. This is just like use your brain a little bit harder. It's not like learn the patterns of this boss and hit the buttons in this.
Yeah,
I can't imagine it getting to that level.
We'll see. I was excited,
but it's still gonna be funner. Yeah, it's more fun.
No, it totally will. Like we almost quit, and I'm so glad that I was able to like try something different. For those interested, I spent like 2 weeks getting together the software that would allow us to stream, which is a lot more complex than I imagined. Like I knew nothing, basically nothing about video game streaming on Twitch. But there's the studio software that's involved, and I'm using what I guess is the industry standard. It's called OBS. It's like open broadcasting software, which is great. It allows you to compose what they call scenes, which are basically, compositions of different, audio visual sources. So I can build basically a screen that has the full game on one half of the screen, and or maybe filling up like 2/3, because this is not a full screen game. This is from 1995 when monitors were square. So it takes up about 2/3 of the screen. Then the last third can be used to display my face and Mike's face and our artwork. And I have all these different scenes that we can use for, you know, different scenarios. If we just want to show the game, we don't want to show our faces. I have like a starting soon screen that uses artwork and streams music from a playlist in my iTunes and shows the name of the artist and the artwork for the song that's playing, like all this really cool stuff that you can do. But it's like, it's this crazy setup of sources. You have all these different like audio channels that are being routed all over the place. And I'm using loopback. I'm using like a more modern equivalent of Soundflower. And then that's just for the stream. That's just to get the stuff from my computer to the screen. So I have this open broadcasting software open. I have Twitch open. I have the game open, which is running through Steam. And then I have Discord open so I can chat to Mike. And then the extra issue there is that Mike has to be able to see and hear the game as well. But he can't watch the stream because there's like a 3-minute delay on the stream.
Yeah, it's pretty delayed.
So the problem that we were running into for like the first hour and a half was that like, and this was the same on any different like video sharing software that we tried, and we downloaded some like GoToMeeting crap, all this different stuff that just so that Mike could see it and hear it without a lag that would be totally disruptive. The problem was I have a 5K iMac, and the broadcasting software was accepting that as input, and it was exporting that downscale to like 720p, and my computer was then shooting out a 720p streamed Twitch, which was working great. Everything was super smooth there, and then also shooting video and audio and my audio to Mike and grabbing Mike's audio and Mike's video. So there's way too much happening over my Wi-Fi channel because I'm not hooked up to Ethernet, which was a problem. So I think the solution was downgrading the quality of the video that I was exporting to Twitch to 480p, which sounds barbaric, but I think it actually looked totally fine because the game that we're playing is super pixelated anyway. It's 480p is actually overkill for the game that we're playing. And then after that, I mean, you could probably say better than me, but it seemed to be a lot more smooth after that point.
Oh yeah, it was night and day. It was like missing every other word or missing like every 10 seconds of game versus actually being able to keep up with what you were doing and what you were moving around and doing.
Yeah, well, that's good. Next time we should be able to jump into it without problems, providing that I can remember which loopback settings.
You can't save like a template or whatever.
I do. I have the bond, but you know, throughout the week, because I do like breaker meetings over Hangouts and all this other stuff, and then I, you know, we do this podcast. I can't leave them on all the time. Otherwise, certain programs, like I also play like board games and D&D and stuff over Discord with friends, so I can't have all the same audio routing stuff up. Otherwise, they can't hear me, and I can't hear them because it's trying to find all these audio devices. And yeah, so I basically every time we do it, I have to make sure I flip on all the fake audio devices that I set up through Loopback and hook up all the cords and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but it was fun.
Oh my God. It's wild. I just like, there are people who do this professionally, you know, like professional Twitch streamers.
Yeah. But their setup doesn't change. Like their computer is dedicated.
They're typically not two people in on it at once. Like, or something. I don't really know how it works.
Not remotely. Like they do audio. Like, I've noticed they do audio, but those people are also playing the game generally on their computer. Like, they're playing, like, multiplayer is what people are watching on the Twitch, and for the most part, like, they're watching Fortnite, and you can have two people's voices going on Twitch if you're playing Fortnite, because you can just bring in the voice channel from somebody else, and that may even be able to be routed through the game. And of course, all these people are using gaming PCs, which are super high performance. They're probably hooked up to Ethernet, and the software is all built specifically for that platform. OBS, I'm pretty sure, was built for the PC because it looks very PC. It works very PC. There are certain aspects of that program that don't work on Mac, and that's why I had to do all this extra stuff just to capture like the audio, the system audio for my computer to send it through. Like, I had to install a separate audio driver just to make that possible. Which is fine. It was really fun to dig in and see what it takes to actually do that. My friend offered to give me his old gaming PC when he buys a new one. He's a big Twitch guy. He's like, he has a verified Twitch channel, which is pretty cool.
Whoa, dude.
But
that rules.
I'm like, I don't know. That might be overkill for the, like, all these early 90s LucasArts adventure games that I downloaded.
No, you gotta have a dedicated gaming rig, though. Like, that's the one thing. Once I have space. Well, I mean, that's what I mean, you have more room than me. And you know, once I have space for it, like an office or something like that, I'm absolutely putting a gaming rig. Mm-hmm. I'm going to build a gaming rig. Not that I have time to game, but like, I just want to be able to.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole side of my friendship with my friends at home that I miss out on because I don't have a gaming rig. Like, I can't go play, what's that game they play? Vermintide, I guess, what? Where you just like kill rats. Like, it's
Conquer?
Like, it's like a first person. No, it's called Vermintide. It's like Warhammer, some offshoot of Warhammer, huh, or whatever. Let me try and find it for you. Vermintide.
I've never heard of that.
Here it is. Oh yeah, Fat Shark.
Hmm.
It's a Warhammer game. I'm sending it over to you. But essentially, you're just killing rats over and over and over again. And these, like, it's like a horde wave thing. But my friends have a lot of fun with it, and it's just like it's a fun thing that they do. I don't know. I just, there's a lot of games that they do.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever use it for like Fortnite or anything like that. I wouldn't do anything crazy.
Huh.
But like, I just want to be able to play like a lot of the games my friends are playing, and I want to have time for that. Maybe I'll just never have time for it again. Yeah. So it's just a waste of time. But
it's hard to make the time. Like, my friends are very into games as well, and you know, they play a lot of different stuff. They're really into board games though, which is good, because most of those types of things, like the strategy games and D&D and tabletop simulator games, those are available to Mac users on Steam, so I'm able to jump in with them. And like, have you ever heard of Scythe, the board game Scythe?
Mm-mm.
It's sort of it's Settlers of Catan meets Risk with some other cool elements. Like, there's a lot of upgrading and strategy involved. It's Risk, Settlers of Catan, and the Sid Meier's Civilization games all rolled into a board game.
I think I know someone who would love that. Yeah. That's really cool.
It was really fun. I got third of four with the first time that I played it, which wasn't too bad, but it's an interesting game, and it's really cool. But we got to play it on this thing on Steam that's called Tabletop Simulator, and basically it's just like this workshop sandbox place where people can go in and build board games or port existing board games, whether they're legitimate or not. Like, you can play Exploding Kittens on there. Not sure Exploding Kittens is getting paid, but
It's really cool because there's like physics. You can roll dice. Like you could flip tables if you want. Like there's like a whole bunch of stuff you can do, but it's very cool for people who want to play board games with friends that live very far away, which is neat. And it's a lot easier to sit down and play like a couple hours for a board game than it is to invest a ton of time into a video game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think I'm going to try to spend more of what remains of my break. I have about, let's see, what is today? It's the first week of the year, right? So I've got basically one more full week of break left, and I think I'm going to try to play some more video games. I started playing Alien Isolation again. I'd like to get a little further in that.
That's so spooky. You know how spooky that game is? I opted to read a synopsis of the game rather than actually play it. That's how spooky that game is.
It is kind of scary. I mean, it was kind of fun because I played it with May.
Oh, no.
And May is not a video game person. But I was playing it in the afternoon one day, and when I bought this game, I was super excited. I'm a big fan of the Alien universe. I could start an Alien podcast, but I don't have any friends that are that into it.
Joe, dude, I love Alien.
Do you? Oh, well, there yeah. We go.
We could just start another episode of podcast on Alien. Yeah. Well, we could just have like Alien episodes, you know, every once in a while pop up in the feed, kind of like a, like, oh, skipping this week, guys. Yeah. Mike and Jake are on Alien.
Well, I'm a big fan. I was super excited when this game came out, and like the ratings were all really great. I knew, I'm like, I don't play video games. I buy them and they just sit there, but this one's going to be different. And it wasn't. I bought it. I got about 5 minutes into the game and I got stuck. Like I made it into the first main part of the trip.
Yeah, you posted that in your end post.
And
the hatch.
There was a hatch behind this counter in this little room, and you had to go down the hatch. I spent hours the first time I played it trying to find that hatch. I didn't know there was a hatch. There's no direction. Had no idea where I was supposed to go. But I found it this time within the first hour. I did get stuck for quite a bit. I'm like, damn it, this is where I got stuck last time. But I found the hatch and made it through. And then after a while, May actually jumped in and she played for a little bit. And it was fun.
You guys are braver than me.
the part where you first see the creature, it's like, oh, God. Like, it just gives you the heebie-jeebies because you know it's out there now.
What system are you playing this on?
PS4.
PS4, okay, yeah. See, that's the other thing, is that like all the PC Master Race people are like all about, you know, shitting on consoles, mm-hmm. and like how the consoles drop frames so readily, and I don't know, like that's why I'd want to build a gaming rig. But then like I wouldn't be able to play Spider-Man, you know? There's like exclusive titles that I love, like probably Last of Us is going to be exclusive, definitely going to be exclusive, and like I couldn't do that in a PC, so what's the point?
I was watching the making of The Last of Us before we started recording this evening.
Oh yeah, I checked all that stuff out. It was great. Watching the motion capture stuff is really fun.
Yeah, so good, so good.
The alternate, wasn't there an alternate ending to Last of Us?
Potentially, if there was, I don't remember. And if it's explained in that documentary, I haven't got to it yet. But I know there was an expansion, and I don't know if I played that. I thought about booting that up this week too, but we'll see.
There's an expansion. Oh yeah, no, that's great. That's mandatory playing.
Is
you got to play that game.
It's you play.
Yeah,
as,
it's
you play as
mandatory
like
for the
girl,
story.
Right? Or
you play as the girl. What's her name?
Ellie.
Ellie. Yeah, you play as Ellie.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's a prequel. It's a prequel and a prequel and an in betweenquel. So it's like, but you do play as another girl. But it's the same way that you play as Ellie during the regular Last of Us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a great surprise.
Yeah.
That we just ruined.
Yeah. They talk about that in the documentary the game, too. They're like, we actually had to lie to press. And
yeah,
say that you couldn't play as Ellie because they wanted it to be a surprise.
They lied to the press, and they also, the scene, because I think they were using some scenes from that region that you play as her, but they substituted her character's model for, what's his name? I don't remember. It's been so long since I played the game. What's the lead's name? The man.
Oh, yeah. I should know.
Tim, Jim Bob, Southern man. Also the guy of Booker DeWitt. Right, isn't that Booker DeWitt, the same guy who does the voice? He's the guy who does the voice for everything, and like Nathan Drake's from Uncharted.
Yeah, he's in the game too.
He's the
Troy
he's
Baker.
One of the bad guys.
Troy Baker does the voice of the main guy. Joel's the name of the main character.
Joel. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Troy Baker. And Troy Baker's done like fucking everything.
Booker DeWitt from BioShock Infinite
it is,
as well.
Yeah. And he does Two-Face and the Arkham series and. He's very talented.
Voice acting is such an amazing thing to me. Mm. because there's no way in hell I'd ever remember Troy Baker's name. But he's probably in more media. I've consumed more media with him in it than I would have, like, you know, like an Al Pacino thing. Like, he's probably
guess how many credits more ubiquitous than Al Pacino on IMDb.
Troy Baker, yeah. On IMDb, 220.
340.
God damn, I'm sorry, Troy. I'm so sorry I underestimated you, man. You're a prolific voice actor.
Yeah, and he's going to be in Death Stranding. So he's a voice actor, dude, in the two games that I actually give a shit about.
Yeah, Death Stranding is going to be a real... I think it's going to be a big hit or miss. I think it's going to be a big hit, but yeah. Like, it has the potential to be like... What?
I think it's going to be really disappointing in the way that, like, a lot of these games are. Like, people build up these little things that the developers say. Like, the stuff that might... be planned but might not make it in the game, like, so much change. Well, like, for The Last of Us,
like Metal Gear Solid 4. Oh, like, yeah, yeah. that was one of the best. That was what was what Ben and I used to, or Ben would tell me, he goes, that was almost the best game I ever played for Metal Gear Solid 4. Like, it was so good, it was so fun, so satisfying with so many challenges, but just the way the story ends is just, it wasn't an ending. It was just like half a game, and you're like, oh my god, why did they do this? And it's because they fired Kojima. Yeah.
Well, He's off to bigger and better things, which is great.
I hope so.
You know, I just got served an advertisement for an IMDb list while I was looking at Troy Baker's page. It's top 35 video games as rated by IMDb users. Can you guess what the first entry is in this little game here? I think it's backwards.
Angry Bird.
So let's see. This would be the 35th.
Wait, so this is the worst of their top list?
Yeah, like their 35th of their best game.
Oh, I mean, how could I guess this? There's so many of them. Devil May Cry 3? I don't know.
Like, no, it's The Secret of Monkey Island.
Oh, I guess I was thinking far back. I'm just, like, making up games.
I just think that's crazy. That could... Like, I'm truly surprised, and now I want to play it. Our a friend of the show, Taryn, was going to stream The Secret of Monkey Island, and he was all prepared to, actually, like, I think the day after we did our stream, and I was excited to get on there and support. But,
didn't they redo
that's it? That's the problem. He downloaded the special edition, and they don't have the original version on the thing. And they have the option to play the original way, I guess, in the special edition, but all the graphics are different, and it's apparently a very different experience. So he's trying to figure out how to get it working in the original format.
No, dang. They don't have, like, the original in good old games or whatever?
No, I would think it'd be on Steam. And right now, I don't know if the Steam sale is still going on or if it will be when this is published, but the Steam sale is a great thing every year. And this year I finally picked up pretty much all of the Lucasfilm or the LucasArts adventure games, like the Indiana Jones games, the Monkey Island games. I picked all those up, and then I got a bunch of the other like older Star Wars games as well. So we have plenty of things to play if we can ever finish the dig.
I think we will once we get rolling, and I think it'll be really nice to actually not be hampered by all the technical difficulties that we had before.
Yeah. A couple things I need to tune up. I think I fixed the issues of your doubled vocal. It's really weird. Yeah. Just because of the way that all the audio is being channeled through, I think it was picking it up twice because for some reason I think your end of the Discord call was also being sent out to my system audio, which I don't fully understand, but we'll figure that out. It takes having somebody in the chat, though, who can actually tell us, because I can't listen to both. Like, I could put it on my phone, and I've done this before to test it. I put my headphones, my earbuds, into my phone, and then I put those on my ears, and then put my my nice computer headphones over top of them, which can get really confusing. But it's a good way to kind of hear if everything's going through properly.
Right. Right.
But, yeah, our thanks to Sam for helping us through some of the issues that we're working through and sticking around in the chat to help us out on that.
I just like it's delusions of grandeur for sure, but I just think it would be so funny if our stream of the dig got picked up. Because, I mean, is there anybody else streaming this game right now?
It's funny you say that, because when I was thinking about it, I looked. And there was somebody streaming it that day, and they lived in France.
Mother.
And looking at, like, the only other way to tell, like, who's recently been streaming it is to check the video section, and not everybody posts the videos of their recordings, but there was somebody that played it the day before we did. And then looks like somebody played it. A couple of people have played it in, like, the last day. So it is something that people are playing, but Whether or not they're any good at it, we'll see.
Oh, I mean, how can you be good at a game? This is not like watching Call of Duty streamers or Fortnite streamers. Like, oh man, headshot, like 22 kill streak or whatever. This is like, oh, he clicked the mouse 15 times on that part of the screen. Oh, he got through that conversation tree in 15 seconds.
You can be good at it. If you've played the game before, you could be good at it.
Oh, yeah, a cool, a dig speed run.
I don't think it has to be a speed run. Okay. What interests me about Twitch is not the games that I have and can play. It's the games that I'm interested in, but would probably never play myself. So,
I mean, for sure. The replay factor, too, is great. I've been using Twitch for like, well, not maybe not Twitch. I guess I just use YouTube for X-Wing Alliance. Instead of having to play that entire game again and get a joystick and a PC emulator on my Mac, I just opted to watch the whole game played by somebody really well on YouTube, and it was so much better than having to suffer through it myself.
Yeah, but if there are parts where like somebody is really stuck, do you skip? Like, if they edit it, you don't have to, but
yes,
you skip.
100%. Yeah, because it's so annoying.
But you're not watching them stream. Like, you can only skip it when it's like already been recorded. So,
well,
if you know how to play the dig, if you know all the puzzles and everything, you can like play through, and it can still be an enjoyable experience to play. But you're not necessarily streaming the 45 minutes that you're stuck trying to like open up this door. Because you don't know the runes and there's no rhyme or reason. You know what I mean?
I really appreciate there's this one guy, Tetra Ninja, on YouTube that I watch, and he streams all like the Metal Gear Solid games, amongst many, many others. But he's also like a perfectionist, so like his uploads are just his perfect run throughs.
Yeah.
And he cuts out all the times he's failed or died or whatever. It's like maybe like twice in the course of like a 10-hour, you know, playthrough or whatever he'll die and actually keep it in the feed. And then like sometimes for the more obscure games I want to watch in the Metal Gear series or whatever, like I'll switch over to some random other dude who's streaming it, and he'll just be stuck in a room for like he'll have like a 20-minute video, and I'm like, god, Tetra Ninja could crush this level in 15 seconds, and here you are just dicking around in this room for 45
that's
minutes
me,
stuck
man.
On this boss fight.
That's why we're not playing Alien Isolation on this channel. Like, as fun as that would be,
it's too spooky.
It's too scary for Mike. And it's too difficult for Jake.
My roommate, my old roommate, Pat, he would play Alien Isolation in the dark. He would be in his bedroom, which is also his office, in our old apartment, lights off, headphones on, back to the door, staring at his gaming PC. And I was like, how can you do this?
That's awesome.
How would you do this to yourself? Like, anybody could sneak up on you. It's you're listening to it in stereo. It's how the game is supposed to be played, is with stereo headphones.
Yeah.
So you can really terrify yourself.
Well, there's like a whole dimension of the game that I'm not even taking part in, because I don't have the camera and the audio sensor that you're supposed to have up.
Oh.
Because there's like a whole thing. Yeah, it can actually like it can like sense your movements, and
if like you're in the locker hiding from it.
Yeah. Well, that's like, okay, this part I actually don't really understand, because it's so the only reason I think a noise would be loud enough to alert the monster, which is something that can happen if you have the sensor on, would be if somebody's trying to sabotage you. Like, if you had this function on, which I turned off immediately, even though I don't have the thing that I think it's supposed to use to find my audio, if you're playing, the monster is near, if you make a sound, like an audible sound in your room, wherever you're playing the game, it can hear you and it will come towards you. So somebody just has to walk in and say, hey, Jake, what do you want for dinner? And there you go. Game over.
Well, it's more than that. Like, right now, when we've been recording, you know, like I'm looking at my meters on my recorder, and it cuts off at -60 dB. If when you're talking in my headset and it's dead silent, it tickles the meter like every once in a while if my head's leaning too close to the mic. And I would assume the audio sensor has a condenser mic built into it, which are super sensitive, more so than dynamics, and like especially sensitive to room noise. So like, I imagine if you exhale too heavily, that if you can tickle, like if it has a sensor and is sensitive up to -60 dB, then it'll probably pick you up breathing too loud. Like, I don't think it's solely sabotage, although it is certainly a great factor in what you're describing. But yeah, like,
if your dog barks,
like even or if you sniff, like if you sneeze or whatever, like that's exactly what it's made for. If like you cough or sneeze while you're playing, it's meant to like totally immerse you in this game, and it's too scary, man.
Well, that's...
Gabe shouldn't be that scary. Like, Erin had to, like, twist my arm to play Last of Us. It was her favorite game. And she's like, it's my favorite game. You have to play this game. And I'm like, I am too scared. I just can't.
That game is really tense, too. I love those. Like, I like games that are immersive, have good stories, like, are worth playing for those factors alone. And I don't know if The Dig necessarily falls into that category.
It does.
It's
not.
Pretty corny, but it is also really incredible. Like,
the dialogue, I was remarking, the dialogue is great. Yeah. And like, I actually like
well,
the writing.
Well, I'll bring this back up on the stream, but I want to share this with you because that was a point that you really liked. The guy who wrote the dialogue for this game wrote Ender's Game.
Oh, Orson Scott Card? Yep. Oh, well, he's problematic.
Is he? I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I mean, like, here's the thing. All right, this is going to lose me a lot of points. I really liked Ender's Game, and I've read probably, like, two or three of the sequels to the Ender series, and but I do recall that he is very problematic as far as, like, a human being goes, but his writing is pretty solid.
Well, he only did dialogue. The story was completely by Spielberg. And there's a couple of alterations and additions by one of the project managers, who Brian Moriarty. He did Loom, which was like the first big LucasArts adventure game. But
that makes so much sense now. Like now that I'm playing back some of the dialogue in my head, like it sounds just like an Ender's Game novel with like that kind of the back and forth.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like very good. Man, I hate how good he is, but I hate how.
Well, shoot, I didn't know that. Okay, well, that's interesting.
He wrote a really good Iron Man run at one point too. Hmm. Like he did when the Ultimate Universe was just taking off. They did this like weird spin-off Iron Man. They like tried to make Iron Man like a biological Iron Man, and he wrote that first series, and it was really good. They retconned it eventually. In the Ultimate Universe for Marvel, but yeah, he wrote it, and it was very, very poignant writer. Like as far as like battle emotions and science fiction, he just knows what he's doing. Yeah, don't read anything about him if you want to continue to like Ender's Game. Don't read anything about his political views or anything like that.
Noted, and I surely won't. But in any case, it was fun, and I hope we can do it again soon because it was a good time.
We're going to. It's going to be fantastic. Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be a super long thing. Like even if it's just like an hour or so, I think it's,
yeah, pop in an hour every night. We'll broadcast it on our Twitter feed. So if you want to go to Podcasm FM at Podcasm FM on Twitter and just, you know, set up alerts for us or whatever, you know, notifications.
Yeah. We don't tweet unless there's a new episode. And sometimes I even forget to do that. So.
Yeah. I mean, we're very good at our jobs as podcasters.
Oh, I should also, plug, my episode on Chat Cemetery dropped the other day.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
Should definitely check that out. Check out Deanna's podcast. If even if you're not a fan of Stephen King, she can probably get you to be. It worked for me. And Mike is set to be on that show at some point as well. So
I think we pushed my episode back because of, I think she might be a little behind, but I'm also, it's scary to me that I can't finish a book by April.
Yeah, I'm with you though.
I should just stop reading comic books. If I stopped reading comic books, I'd have this book done by next week. But like, there's so many comic books to read, man. Yeah. And I'm perpetually an infant.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
There's so much I want to read too. And May's mom. Oh, I forgot to mention this in the Christmas section. Okay. May's mom like killed it on Christmas this year. Okay. Well, we don't like get to see her very often, like maybe once or twice a year. She lives on the other side of the state, which isn't like really all that too far, but she's very busy and we're very busy and it's just how it is. So I talked to her on the phone once or twice over the past couple months, and she knows that I like the Beatles, and we just kind of like talked a little bit about the Beatles and her, like, you know, who her favorite Beatle was and her favorite Beatles records and all that stuff. And she's a big Barnes & Noble fan. So when Christmas rolls around, you can pretty much guarantee that it's going to be something from Barnes & Noble, which is great. It means I don't have to get a membership. But this year she got us, she got me, but May and I will probably listen to it together. She got us a copy of George Harrison's big album. And it's great because like we were actually listening to that on the way to go see her that day. And I was like, man, what are the chances of that? Right.
Which album? All Things Must Pass, yep. Or different?
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I say the big one, like then. that is the best of the Beatles solo work, in my opinion. I think Imagine is probably fairly close, but I don't know. That record is just so amazing.
Harrison, everyone, I mean, everybody has their different favorite Beatle, mm-hmm. but like Harrison just is like different, next level, yeah. I think. Like George is just the best. John and Paul had a thing, mm-hmm. you know, and they're brilliant and genius and everything they did. And Ringo, you know, he had his moments too. But George was just like, he saw it all.
I could talk about that forever because he's just so underappreciated. And the fact...
We should do a Beatles episode at some point.
God, I'd love to. Like, if we do, though, yeah. It's going to be a long one. I fucking love the Beatles. They're just so amazing to me. And we can go on for hours. But yeah, she got me that. And then she got me the Beatles lyrics book, which I've wanted for a really long time. It has like a bunch of the handwritten lyrics and you know, just a bunch of stories behind that. So I've got that I can read in tandem with A Hard Day's Right, which is a really cool behind the scenes look at every single song the Beatles put out. And then I've got Paul McCartney's The Life, the biography.
Yes.
So I've got a lot of Beatles reading to do, which is fun because that's something I will actually do. Whereas fiction, I have a hard time jumping in and submersing myself. I enjoy it when I get there, but I can read about the Beatles forever.
It's not book on tape either, so you're actually going to have to, you know, dedicate eyeballs to this.
That's right.